Some, now you don't call a nigger heaven, you say dark people heaven. Anyway, so anyway, otherwise we kept going. Then now, like I said, in the fall of the year, we went down south New York. We caught gales of wind, bad one. And the bad one I caught, I told a little while ago that we got 81 miles an hour. And I talked with the captain of the pilot boat off of New York, a nice man too. He always talked with me every time I go out, or not coming in, always. But I never met the man face to face while he was in the big pilot boat. Crisis was about 150 feet long, and Crisis was about 30, 40 feet out of the water. A regular big yacht, millionaire's yacht that was, they had. I don't know if they got it now or not. Anyway, I haven't been there for many years. Anyway, so he told me, Captain Joe, it's a hard chance to take. And he said, why, we stopped the ships coming out. There's only one ship coming out, and I don't believe he's going to make it, but there's one ship coming out, and there's 20 or 25 steamers, all holding to bow against the wind. The sea is rough. He said, we wouldn't let them come in. We wouldn't let them go in. Why, somebody liable to get run down, you know? Nasty, raining, blowing. How many miles from the other side of this tape? I asked him how many miles the wind is blowing. He said, wait a minute, Cap, I tell you. He told me 81 miles an hour. Holy mother of God, I said, my God. He said, Captain Joyce, you better stay alongside the lightship, bow against the wind. He said, why, I don't think you're going to make it. So we started alongside the lightship for a while, and Jesus, some of them sea boys scared the life out of you. And one of them sea caught you broadside, it'd break the, take the pilot house right off the deck, everything, break the rails, everything. So we hold about to the wind, bye-bye, call the pilot board, and say, Cap, we can't stay here. Why, one of them sea hit us, there'd be nothing left. You only will find Kittlewood. I said, on the beach somewheres. So we got to go try to make it in. Oh, he said, all right, you try to make it in, and I'll keep coming toward the buoys, you know, fairway buoys. So we started going full speed, you know, I said, you know, the faster we go, I thought we'd be better. And we started going, because we had the 65,000 of pogies, they call them, scups down there, here we call them, but they call them pogies down in New York. We had a pretty good trip of fish aboard. So we started going, and the pilot boat started coming with us. We could see off and on. But we had the radar going, and he had the radar going. Anyway, so we made the fairway buoy, 4 mile buoy inside. We made the buoy nice. That was all right, going fine. After we got by the buoy, we could hit one sea down the Lord. And the sea was so big. There's only 9, 10 fathom water, 15 fathom water, the deepest from the lightship, around the lightship and up to the mouth of the channel of New York. Not feet, fathom. Anyway, so we got hit one sea. She went out on a sea. A sea come down on the stern, hit the stern so high that it went over the stern, over the pilot house, into the ventilator. My two ventilators on top of the pilot house must have been 20 feet from the water. Went round to down the engine room. The engine room was closed. Good thing the door was closed, the engine room. And it filled the deck up. It looked like one of them submarines just coming out of the water. When you see a submarine on moon picture television, showed the periscope started to come up, that's what we look. So now, as we was going along, my boy Sammy said, Pa, you better run her slow. And we lost, when she hit the sea, hit us, we lost control of the boat. She went so fast, must have gone 20 miles an hour, lost control, you couldn't steer her. But what saved us is she had the ballast, good ballast, and she had the fish on it. She was trim right. It's 90% of the battle of fishing if you trim the boat right anyway, so you wouldn't have a list. And when we get hit the sea, the first thing the pilot boat called up, come in, Cigar Joe, come in, Cigar Joe. I couldn't answer right away. I was looking at the deck. Jesus, the deck was full. The stern was underwater, cracking full of water. The deck was full of water. They could plop the stern right in the level of the water. The deck was all full of water, up to the doghouse, way up to the mast forward. And boy, that's a lot of tonnage of water on deck. That brought the boat low. So after we run it slow, we released, let the boat breathe. So run it very slow. She breathed, got the water out of her. After we got the boat, I answered the pilot boat. I said, the pilot boat, come in, pilot boat. He said, Cap, he said, we didn't see you no more on the radar. He said, what happened? I see here, there's the covers all up. It looked like a submarine. We just come out of a submarine coming out of water. Yeah, I lost you out of sight on the radar. And he said, I'm coming full speed. Thought I might, you know, come over and see what happened. So I said, okay, you can come if you want to. I said, I'm going to ride her slow, let her go very slow, going in until we make the fairway buoys inside, the channel buoys. Gonna run. And when she was running slow, the boat took it better. She had a chance to breathe. You know, and breathe like up on the sea. When a big sea comes over 30, 40 feet high, 20 feet high, comes and hits you, your boat got a better chance. And whatever was carrying the speed, you could control the speed, you know, steer her. The other way, she went so fast that you lose control of it so fast. Anyway, as it was, first thing we got to the red buoy and white buoy. It's supposed to be a big red buoy and white buoy, just same as off of Gloucester Harbor. The red buoy flashing off of Gloucester, big buoy, or Thatcher's buoy, same way, big buoy. And when we see, we come in, it was close. There's only about 4 or 5 fathom of water. It might be 60, 70 feet, 80 feet of water. Enough the tankers come in, 90, 100 feet of water might be. What's that, 10 or 15 fathom, 10 fathom. And when we get hit near that, between the channel buoys, and that's the first time in my life, and I think they're going to be the last time in my life, I seen the big red buoy about 20 feet goodbye us underwater. She was way underwater, flashing underwater. Now you can see how high it was, that the buoy went underwater about 10 or 15 feet underwater, the light. Not the buoy itself, the whole business. Anyway, we got hit the second sea. That was a bad one too. Anyway, we come, and first thing we got in the inside the channel, and the wind, you know, wind was there, but no big seas no more. The sea broke outside, and the pilot boat was right exactly near the channel buoys, the big one. He was watching us. And so I called him up. I said, I see a steamer coming from the harbor coming out. He said, I just told him to go back. When I seen you with that big sea hit you, I told him go back and turn around, go back. And he's trying to turn around. Watch out for him, Joe. He said, well, it's a hard job to turn around with this wind, you know, the steamer. I said, okay, we keep clear of him. And we run it slow, you know, until we got off, Brooklyn side, we're way toward the Marine Basin, and there's a Coast Guard station there. We run it slow and go along fine, and we wasn't worried about sea no more, the only wind, but no sea. And when he told me 81 miles an hour, I think my head stand up off my hair. My hair must stand up in the air, 81 feet. I've been caught once before with the Beauty St. Joe's, 90 miles an hour, but I had a big vessel under my feet. But this one is a 73-footer and a 100-foot big vessel like the Blue Nose or the Henry Ford. And them big boat, that's two different things. 90 and 80 and a small boat in like 73 feet. But what saved us most that we didn't roll over was the fish we had and the ballast. She had plenty of ballast, you know. She was high, but she had plenty of ballast. They kept her. And we got into Fulton Market next morning. I think we got 3.5 cents a pound for pogies or 4 cents a pound. I don't remember. And well, it wasn't fat for 2 days fishing. We was out there. We got caught. There was a couple of boats got lost. Up Atlantic City and off Winter Quarter, two or three boats got lost. Fishing boats smaller than we were. Smaller boats than we was, you know. But, you know, that's the way things gambled. Now, we could get lost, too. That sea would have been hit us sideways. We'd roll right over like a top. The boat couldn't take it, or it'd break the whole side of the boat. Because she opened up, she would open up and leak. But we hit us over the stern, and the boat was going so fast that it took the pressure of the sea pushed us so fast that it didn't have a chance to bang hard on the boat. But the engineer was down in the engine room. He thought we sunk. The water coming through the ventilator come down, you know, big high ventilators. Facing forward. The ventilator's facing forward, wasn't facing aft. No, they was facing aft. The ventilator, they come down, the sea was so high that it went right through down to the ventilators, right down. We had the dory on top of the cradle on the stern, two dories, broke one of our dories, two. See, we didn't care what it break as long as we didn't leak. You know, that's what counts most, and nobody get hurt. And we got to New York, everything was fine. So that's the way it goes. Now, there's a lot of others yet coming on this tape. When I get through here, get up some air. We measured the ventilators from the water, exactly 22 feet high. The end of the top of the ventilator to the water, it was 22 feet high. We measured at the wharf. They wouldn't believe it, the water comes. Then we heard about them boats got lost. So I said, thank the Lord, everything turns out right anyway. It turned up fine. You know, you got to thank the Lord when it's like that, something like that. But if we stood near the lightship that night, I think we would get lost. We would get lost, sure, because when them sea would hit you, there'd be kettle wool, you'd find them on the beach. You might find our body if the crabs would eat us up, or the lobsters, or what. what I mean to say, to see how things are. They are. Anyway, so anyway, as it goes, we kept fishing just the same. After we get through there, fix everything up, we had to go fishing again. Can't go work ashore. You're a fisherman, you got to go fishing, regardless you like it or not. After that, we started fishing off in New York, same thing, right along. And then, before the spring was coming, we went off of Cape May, New Jersey. Fish off of Cape May, New Jersey. Of course, you get caught bad weather, it's good weather. You can't say you always get good weather, but you never get all good weather. It's impossible. If you get 1 or 2 days, you're 60, 70 miles from the land, and it makes it hard to say good weather. Anyway, we was there, fishing, and one night it started to breeze up. There was us and another fellow, Captain Bill. I don't know the name of the boat, but Captain Bill, he's from Gloucester just now. He just lost his boat. Got sunk, sunk off of Montdesert. He did, his boat did. One fellow got lost from Captain Bill's boat, the Sea Breeze. So anyway, it was one step to another. So anyway, he was another boat that belonged to the Producers Fish Company and somebody else. He got caught and he couldn't steer the boat. He had one of them 90-foot sub chasers, new ones, and he couldn't steer the boat. And he was, Jesus, don't know, he could talk with me. Joyce, I don't know what to do. I can't run a bare pole. She always goes butt side. And every sea hit us, I think they're going to break us in two. So I said, Jesus, we got bow to the wind. We're putting the bow to the wind. That's good. If you can put the bow to the wind, you're all set, Joe. Put the bow to the wind, run it slow. You go up and down the sea, but you get hit once in a while, but not bad. Anyway, so as it was, going along that night, he was about 5 miles away from us. We couldn't help each other. It was blowing hard. I don't know how hard it was, but it was real blowing hard. Yes. So I said, what do you think of it? My God, he said, that's the worst I've seen so far this year. I said, we got caught off in New York. We was in that time when you got caught, you know? I said, and then you didn't, this one, I said, any worse than the other one. I said, I don't think it's blowing as hard as the other one. It was blowing hard, anyway. So it was, we was talking back and forth all night long. Who the hell can sleep? Nobody can sleep. I had the wheel, my boy had the wheel, and my cousin had the wheel. My other son, Musty. Musty, the engineer, had the wheel too. We had control in the pilot house, so they could get released each other, you know, so to help you. Well, you get tired, turn the wheel. Every time you're going to turn the wheel, you're going to turn about 10 times to get a position right. You know, it's geared up so that you could steer one finger, but you had to turn it back and forth. Anyway, first thing we know, one sea hit us. Happened to be on my watch. And I happen to have the wheel, too. You know, and it hit us. One sea hit us a little bit sideways. Okay, I was figuring, I said, blowing so hard, I'll let it run side a little bit, sideways, hug the land, you know what I mean, instead of stay one place. So I let her run it for a while that way. When the big sea come, turn about of the wind, slow right down. When the sea smoothing down a little bit, you open her up and let her go sideways, so cutting toward the land. And one sea hit us. And it hit us damn hard in the pilot. I thought it took the pilot house everything off, but it didn't. It sprung a leak on the trunk of the pilot house while we had 18 bronze rod, 1.25-inch shaft, right through the pile house and through the deck. So he hit the pile house. He couldn't break the pile house as it was. So he turned around and sprung the bottom where he was cocking on the deck. You know, sprung, leaking on the deck. So we haul her up to bow to the wind again, now right slow, try to do the better. My boy Sammy and a couple of the gang, George, I don't know what their last name is, they all started caulking from inside the pile house and the with the deck and the trunk comes together. They had a caulk it by inside, couldn't caulk it outside because you get washed overboard. They caulked, so it didn't look so much. Now we kept it the rest of the night bow the wind. And then after daylight we let it run. On daylight you can see better, and the wind is dying down, and we went to Cape May. We took our fish in Cape May, New Jersey, took them out. I don't know how much we had, but we took out what we had. Anyway, so now we started fishing from Cape May. Now, while we was fishing Cape May, we supposed to go to the fella, one of the bosses, while we was tired of Cape May, said, Joyce, why don't you get some whiting? We need some whiting. He said, they're good whiting, big whiting, I give a good price. If they're mixed small like that, you'll get 2 cents. If you're bigger one, you get more price, you know? So I said, we might see what the hell it was. So we went out and we fished one day. We had about 11,000 big whiting, 4-inch mash. We didn't get no small ones. So we come in and some boats had 30, 40,000. We only had about 10, 11,000 big ones, no small ones. And so they paid the other fellas 2 cents and he wanted to give us 4 cents. I said, you're crazy. I said, I'll ship in New York to the company I do business with. We've been getting 11 cents for them, for big white. And I said, now you want to give us 4 cents? Are you crazy, John? This is John's. So the first thing, they turned around, I said, I'll call New York. He said, don't call New York, I'll give you more if you have to. I said, okay, what is it? He went up to 7 cents. I said, no, I want 11 cents or I'll ship in New York. And the head fella, I can't remember his name just now, he come down the wharf and he told John, he was partners, he said, pay Joe 11 cents. Well, New York said that's what he'd been paying Joe, the good stuff, and we want good stuff. We don't want all that mixed stuff all the time, he said. So he gave us 11 cents for 11,000 pounds. So that was all right. So 2 days later, the boat was going to go out fishing. We're all going to go out fishing. So I told the gang, at 10 o'clock, we go out tonight. Some of the boats went out 9, 8, like 3, 4 Gloucester boats. 2 boats from Cape May and 2 boats from Gloucester. They went out. So I come down, I think 10 o'clock, I was in the bar room with the boys talking, having some fun. And I come down, my boy Sammy, he said, start her up. No, no, we ain't gonna start this. And he was, my boy Sammy was engineer at the time. We ain't gonna start that engine, regardless what you say, he said. We ain't going out. I said, why? He said, captain of the other boat inside of a tie from a Cape May boat. She belongs in Gloucester now, but the old man is dead now. I can't remember his name either. He said, he come over and told me to tell your father not to leave the wharf tonight. I know, he hate to, be here. So you got to go out. But tell him not to do it. Sammy, please do me a favor. You're the engineer. Don't start that engine, regardless what your father say. My boy said, but if you want me to start the engine, I'm going to show you. You can go out. I ain't going to go out. The man told me that he got the weather report. So I said, where did he get it? He said, he got it from Readerville, Virginia. He said, well, he always gets contact some certain wave, such a frequency that he gets it. So I said, okay, then if he told you that, what the hell is Shagam? All the other boats out, let him go out. He said, don't worry about it. We never got rich. We ain't going to get rich now for one day. Wait a day or two until the weather breaks. As it was, we stood there. Next morning, first thing morning, who comes the captain of the other boat? He's a Cape May boat. And he come over, hey, Captain Joe, how is it? I said, all right, tie the wharf. He said, you're better off tied at the wharf. I just got the weather report, that's why I come down here. You're going to blow 50, 60 miles an hour this afternoon. Holy Jesus. You're lucky to say you didn't go out. I told your boy not to go out. Yeah, he told me he wouldn't start the engine regardless. Regardless what I tell him, he wouldn't start the engine, so you told him that, so I appreciate it, you know? You see them fellas are out, they're going to get caught, all of them. So anyway, WOU didn't bring the weather report in New York until 12:20. They got the weather report 40, 50 miles an hour, higher gusts, the boats outside. So we were tied at the wharf. And the boat started to come in that evening, and they couldn't come in. So it take a long run. They were, Christ, 100 miles off, 90 miles off of Cape May. So they couldn't come in that night. Anyway, next day they call us up. I was at the wharf listening to the telephone, and they call us up. Joe, he said, we heard them talking. They were kicking like hell. They couldn't get into the breakwater in Cape May. It was so rough. One fella got hit outside the breakwater there, trying to, put the bow of the wind. He got hit, and he said, who broke the windows of the pile house? The pile house got full of water. The radar got full of water. You can't see nothing. If you can't see nothing, you're done. But they had the other two boats with them. So he said, let us know what do you think of it? I said, the tide's going out just now, and you can't come in. I know how rough it is. I know it's bad. And if the tide going out, you can't come in. I've been in Cape May well before you fellas was around here. I said, tide, you can't come in. You got to wait until the tide changes. When the tide change starts, come in. Just when it slack up, that's the time to drive it in. He said, will you please check on it and keep us in contact all the time. So I kept the phone open, contact. Me and my boy Sammy stood outside the rail, watch the tide, and it's slowing down, slowing down. But an hour later, I said, boys, 15 minutes from now, you'll be ready. The tide's going to change. And if you fellas can make it, all right. If you don't make it, goodbye, Jesus. I said, I can't help you. It's up to you. Okay, Joe, we'll wait a few more minutes when you say so. I said, when I said the tide wasn't moving in the boat, I said, now is the time. And the boat, all three, now same time, the whole three boats come in right after another. They didn't get hit with the sea because the tide was slack. And when the tide goes out to the river between the breakwater and hits some big sea, it makes a regular breaker. But when the tide started slowing down, there was no strong tide, and the wind was strong enough anyway. So the Tucker called me. Captain Tucker, he had a subchase, an old subchase. He called me, Joe, you think I make it? He said, hurry up. I'll fire you. He said, about 4 miles. I drive all you can, Captain Tucker. I said, if you don't, if the tide turns, I'll say goodbye, Jesus, again. I said, you know, you wouldn't be able. Tide started to come up, it's all right, but the tide changes, goodbye. I'm just calling you now, it's slack water. Anyway, so he made it. Now, first thing, I was in the pilot house, and I hear one of the boats from Wildwood, New Jersey, calling. Come in, Cigar Joe, come in, Cigar Joe. So I answered. I said, what is it? He said, how does it look there? Terrible. I said, where are you? He said, we're just inside the ship. That's about 8 miles, 7 miles. You think we make it? I said, I don't know. It's up to you. What do you think? He said, by the Jesus, we can't stay here. It blows so heavy, hard. So we can't stay here. We're going to try to make it. Okay, I said, I'll keep my phone on, open, and you let me know. At 7 o'clock that evening, he called me up. He said, we can't make it. We're going to turn back, go out. Get out and bow against the wind, you know, and try to hold a, jog it out if we can. But, you know, she was a small boat. She was only about 60-foot boat and low in the water. And there were three German fellas, young fellas. The owner of the boat, I knew him well. He was from Wildwood, too. So I said, if you any time, I'll have the phone all, open all night long. Give me a call, anything happens, let me know what's going on. So I told my boy Sammy, Sammy, you take a watch, look, stay, listen to the phone, see if they call. And when you get tired, you're going to lay down, I'll stay up. You know me? We'll listen. And we never heard no more. Now, like I said, next morning, a man come down and I told him, he said, could you call him up on the phone, try and see if you can get him? I said, sure, come aboard. He come aboard, I tried to get any boat who was on the air. Nobody was in the air at all. Same time that happened, there was a subchaser was in Cape May before that, the day before that. He went out, some fellows from Virginia, and there was four men in the boat. They went ashore off between Delaware and North Carolina, the coast. He wasn't too far, but and they leave one subject another. And now we leave that one and go to the other one. Now we call all the boats out and never could get no answer. We call this fella here that was missing too. We didn't get no answer. Come to now about 10 o'clock in the morning, we heard that the boat went ashore, one of them, the sub chaser, and they found one of the men climb on a telephone post off the beach. There's a beach, all beach here. And he went on the post, telephone, get out of the sea. The sea was going high, way the hell high. And he got on the post and he died there. And the other three men, they didn't find him. But the boat was total lost, one of them. Now when I was talking about that, I talked last, no news at all, anything. So Jesus didn't know what the hell to do. So they sent a plane out to look, no sight. But 2 days later, we heard they've seen a piece of the wood, piece of the pile house, a piece of the stern of the boat, of a Cape Patrick, where the tide goes there to the southern like a brook. And when it got hit, broke up, the boat went up, pieces went up down Cape Patrick's beach. When it hit the corner of Cape Patrick's, about them 2 days or 3 days, that thing must have gone about 40, 50 miles drift with the sea and the wind. Anyway, as it was, couldn't find a good loss. Them three boys, nice fellas. I met them before, nice fellas, German, young German fellas, good workers, nice boys, the whole three of them. So, anyway, I'll stop now for a minute. As it was, them boats that come in the time, they all had good trips of whiting. They all had 50, 60, 70,000 whiting. Tucker had 100,000, I think. They had good trips anyway. Good luck to them. But if I wasn't there, they'd never be able to come in because nobody would tell them nothing when they come in. And they would try to come in with the tide going out, they all get drowned. Now the owner of the boat that got lost, there were the three young German fellas, nice fellas. When they reported the piece was on Cape Patrick, he went over Cape Patrick, identified. There was a piece of the stern or the pilot, I don't remember now. He said, that's my boat, all right, you know? So the men questioned, know what become and what happened, nothing. So, but a week later, we was out fishing the territory right close, by the spring of the year now, fishing for pogies. We was about, I say, 20 miles from Five Fathom Bank Lightship. And we was towing along, and the first thing we pick up, a couple of wire baskets, brand new baskets. So I looked at them, I said, Jesus, that might be from the boat. That's where they get hit. When the sea hit them, I said, basket on deck, everything went away. And we got the two baskets, three baskets tied, all tied together. So that meant they were tied, and the sea broke loose, everything, you know? So anyway, we brought them in and told them. I was sorry to hear them, but it happened. And the next thing we know, I was in there about two, 3 days, 4 days later, I was in Cape May. The wife, two wives of the young fellows, they live in Wildwood, they come down. They want to speak to me. So tell you the truth, I didn't have the guts to face them. Tell them, I heard your husband, before they get drowned. So I said to my boy Sammy, talk to him and tell him I'm sleeping, you know? I didn't want to talk to him, you know, kind of, I had that bad feeling, you know? So after a while, they said, no, we insist to see Cigar Joe, he's the last man to talk with my husband, you know? So I had to get up. I said, yeah, madam, I'm sorry. I couldn't help him. So I heard you help the other boats. She said, we heard on the phone, you was telling what to do to come in. You told Tucker, hurry up before you can never make it. And you told my husband, he was skipper of the boat, you told him, Jesus, it's getting awful bad here now with the tide. He said, I'm going to try it, but after dark, I said, it's damn hard to do. So we'll have to hold it, do the best we can near the ship somewheres. So, you see, I couldn't help him. I had the phone on all night. And she said, I heard you calling during the night, calling the boat. 2-3 times you call. Every time I was on watch, you know, waiting for the call, I call them. See, they might receive or fix the telephone or something, you know? So I couldn't get his, we heard you calling them. He said, you know my husband? I said, yeah, I know him not too well, but I know I met him. But I know the old man that owns the boat. I said, I know him well. We fished together close different times off of Gloucester here. I mean, Cape May, years ago, too. So, yeah. So anyway, we started talking. I said, no, you still, nobody can help you. A lot of people can help you, that's all. I said, nobody. It's up to them now. What they're gonna, they can't do nothing anyway. I knew they were drowned right away when they didn't answer the phone. I said, see, hit them, knock the pilot house, control everything, goodbye, Jesus. That's the way it is. Something like that. Anyway, so we fished all right along there from Cape May, New York. We didn't go to Atlantic City at all. We fished all the way down, and one day we was in Cape May. One day I was in Cape May. I took a ride, a friend of mine's car. We went down Phoebus. See, Isaac Fast, Louis boys used to run Isaac Fast. Isaac Fast used to be in Portsmouth, Virginia. Now they were in Phoebus. The old man Isaac died. His brother Louis had a place in Phoebus. I don't know if they still got it now or not. I couldn't tell you that. But they were good fellas. They used me good. I can't say nothing wrong about them. So I went to see him, and we were talking. And then we talk about the boats that got lost, you know. He said, that boat, the sub-chaser that got lost on between Delaware and Norfolk, the beach here, but I can't remember what the beach it was. He said, that boat used to take fish out to us. So now we got one boat less. So I was talking back and forth. It was all right. He offered me fish. I said, no, I don't want no fish. Then I asked him, do you have any oysters? Yeah, we got oysters, Joe. So I said, give me a couple of quarts. I want to buy a couple of quarts. I got a couple of quarts of oysters from him. He wouldn't take no money. Louis didn't want to take no money, but he knew I'd done business with him in 1928, 30, 31, different years, you know. I'd done business with him before that, too. So he wouldn't take no money from me. So we brought him in. It's a good long ride from Cape May to Norfolk, you know. I think it's 2.5 hours, a 3-hour drive. I don't remember exactly. But anyway, we got back. And now we fished the rest of the winter there. Didn't get rich. I never get rich in my life. No matter how much weather I get it through. But we fish. You got to fish, and that's all there is to it. You got to take the sweet and the sour. Sometimes we take more sour than sweet. I'd rather have the sweet, but that's the way it goes. You got to take it which way it comes, as it is. So now I'm here sitting down, thinking. Of course, I miss a lot of stuff, but I don't tell you all the details. you know, them things that were love affairs, anything like that. I just tell them, I always kid them about it. Now come to the end of the season, I said, we start to come to Gloucester, fish off of Gloucester somewheres, anyways. So we start to come home this way. And we started to come home in Gloucester, we get in Gloucester, and we stood a while, straightened things up, and then we go fishing again.